This is University Radio Nottingham.
Hello and welcome to Feminottingham. It is your weekly dose of feminist news around Nottingham and the whole of the UK, really. Today's topic is equal pay, something that is quite a prevalent issue, something that people get quite worked up about, quite rightly. And also, what is equal pay? What's the difference between equal pay and the gender pay gap? Because they are completely different things, and I think that's why equal pay sometimes is a very confusing subject to discuss. That's what we'll be discussing today. The issue that I think is very key here and that we need to make very, very clear and we need to distinguish is the difference between the gender pay gap and equal pay, and why it's incredibly important and vital to distinguish between the two. So, the gender pay gap reporting regulations came into effect on the 5th of April 2017, with organisations in Britain over 250 employees required to post the results on their website or upload them to the government website by the 5th of April this year and all following years subsequently. So 10,610 employers have revealed their gender pay gap results by the deadline. There remains a lot of confusion about what should be shown and amongst the public as to what the gender pay gap actually means and why it's different to equal pay. And I think when we discuss it, I think the two terms are bandied around a lot. For example, the two terms positive discrimination and positive action. They're completely different things. Positive discrimination is actually illegal and positive action is not, but they're used interchangeably, and that is completely wrong. And that is why we're creating toxic environments of feminism being seen as very negative, because the terminology is being used wrong. What exactly is the gender pay gap? And the gender pay gap is the thing that we are querying and the thing that people are posting the statistics about. The gender pay gap is the difference between the gross hourly earnings for all men and the gross hourly earnings for all women, and it's expressed as a percentage of men's earnings. So that means that all women and all men are put against each other, regardless of background, regardless of class, regardless of jobs. It's what the average woman of the same age is making next to the average man of the same age. And then the percentage, so for example, 23.6%, men are paid 23.6% more at the University of Nottingham on average. So that's not a single case-by-case basis. It gets a little bit mathsy from there, as it should, but I won't go into specific. That's what the gender pay gap is, but that is not what equal pay is. Equal pay is entirely illegal. Equal pay is men and women being paid for the same work and work rated as equivalent work or work of equal value set out by the Equal Act of 2010. Where gender pay mixes all earnings together, that is not actually a case of equal pay. All companies should, and generally do, because it is regulated by law, pay men and women exactly the same for the same work or work of equal value. And that's the same here at the University of Nottingham. A professor at the same level, in the same department, doing the same job, will be paid exactly the same, whether they are a woman or a man. And so that's where the key difference is. The gender pay gap is a very, very different thing to what that is. Gender pay gap is the difference between what men typically earn in an organisation compared to what women earn, irrespective of their role and seniority. Equal pay is a legal requirement for men and women to be paid the same for performing the same or like work. One of the main reasons for the gender pay gap is that men are more likely to be in senior roles. An organisation that predominantly has men at senior levels and women in junior roles, and that is exactly the case with the university as I'll go on to discuss, will have a gender pay gap. However, wise organisations are aware of the heightened attention on equal pay as a result of their focus on the gender pay gap, and there's free confusion of the terms. Their response is to be taken audits of their pay equality purposes, review their pay equality and analyse their pay. In contrast to equal pay, the gender pay gap is much more of a reflection of the workforce profile than the unequal rewards for men and women doing the same job. So I think that's where we really find the difference, that the gender pay gap is very much a socialised, ingrained thing about certain women going into certain roles of work. And this is something I discussed with Close the Gap, that certain jobs are gendered, that certain roles like cleaners and cooks and this kind of thing are very much more, in certain people's brains, a female job. And then senior roles of CEOs or whatever the case may be, that's a male job. And these male jobs tend to pay more, even if you are working for the same organisation. So that is the distinction, and if you take anything away from this episode, it's to know the difference between those two, and I think that's the real important thing to gauge in this debate.
You're listening to Femme Nottingham.
University Radio Nottingham. 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 Nottingham.
All right, time for the interview of me speaking to Close the Gap. Close the Gap, as we will go on to say in the interview, is a Scottish charity working on making labour and the workforce a lot easier and a lot more fair for women. And this is when I spoke to one of their employees about what they do and how the gender pay gap affects women in everyday life.
Tell me a little bit about Close the Gap, what you guys do, and how you got involved in the company.
Close the Gap. We're a charity and we work in Scotland on all things related to women's participation in the labour market. And we receive funding from the Scottish Government to do that. So it's one of their key priorities, is focused on gender inequality in the labour market. So that involves quite a wide range of work. Because we recognise that gender gap is a structural issue, we tend to work at a strategic level. So we're only a small team of five women, so we don't really have the resources or the staff to be kind of helping individual women with equal pay claims, and that would be more appropriate for women to seek legal advice for those issues. So we work more at a strategic level, which involves working with policymakers at a central and local government level to try to get them to consider how gender impacts the development and delivery of policy. So gender should really be considered at the outset of the development of any policy, because all public policy is ultimately inflected and articulated by gender. And we also work to try and influence just how that policy then is developed to make sure that it doesn't unintentionally perpetuate gender inequality in the labour market. We also work directly with employers. So we work with employers in the public sector in Scotland to support them to comply with public sector equality duty. The public sector equality duty is forms part of the Equality Act that applies to public bodies across the UK. But in Scotland, we have an additional set of specific duties which require public bodies to take proactive steps to tackle discrimination and to advance equality. And that applies to all of the protected characteristics, but obviously as we focus on women, we focus on that one. And we also work with private sector employers to try and encourage them to take action to close the pay gaps and to address issues affecting women in their workplace. And we do a little bit of work to support trade unions as well, to try and make sure that they are having gender as a central consideration of their bargaining, making sure that they're working to identify and address issues of gender inequality in the workplaces where they are.
Going into a bit more specific, you mentioned that you guys see gender and the pay gap as a structural issue. Could you explain that in a little bit more depth?
Yes, well, what we mean by that is that the structures of the labour market are ultimately what causes the gender pay gap. It's not that women as individuals are less able to work at senior levels or less likely to want to work at senior levels, or work that women tend to do is undervalued and underpaid because it is done by women, because the market has not accommodated women at all. The further back you go, in more modern times, as women have started to move into the labour market, undervalued economically. So the biggest example of this is care work, anything to do with care, child care, elder care. Those jobs are among the lowest paid in society, and they're low paid because they are done by women, and also because that work tends to be done by women paid at the home as well, and that labour is just so feminine coded. It's just seen as something that women are just good at, and therefore we don't need to pay them that much to do it, because you know they just get such great satisfaction out of the work. It's still for the functioning of society, and if it wasn't being done, whether out of the labour market or unpaid in the home, the entire economy would cease to function, because people need their children to be looked after in order to go to work. People need dinner on the table in order to go to work. People need a clean home to live in order to be able to go to work, to know, helps the economy to function. So that's an example of how the pay gap is a structural issue. It's not just about the actions of individual women, it's about how structures of the labour market, how the practices of employers and to value men's work more than women.
A big part of your charity is the pay gap, but it's also more broadly just inequality in the labour market and treatment. So what are the main causes, other than the ones you've mentioned, do you think, for women's equality in the workplace?
Unequal pay is one of the causes of the pay gap, but most of the causes of the pay gap exist out west the law. So it's not just about looking at pay, it's far more complicated than that. And a single figure, like for instance an organisation's gender pay gap or even or a national gender pay gap, it cannot capture the complexities that go underneath that and the causes. So the causes, they're slightly different depending on the context, but there's a set of causes that underpin the gender pay gap across the board. Occupational segregation is one of those, and that's where gender norms, stereotyping about women doing different types of work, which is like where you'll see women clustered into jobs that are feminine coded and men clustered into jobs that are masculine coded, so for instance women in care jobs, men in construction. And that is called horizontal occupational segregation. And then there's the other, which is more commonly referred to as the glass ceiling, and that's where men and women are concentrated into different levels of work, so women find it very difficult to progress to more senior roles. That is a key cause of the pay gap. Another major cause is the lack of quality part-time and flexible working, which results, again, contributes to that glass ceiling, women's underrepresentation at management levels and their concentration in lower grades, concentrated in very low-paid jobs. There's a lack of part-time work at senior levels, and that is, again, down to the fact that part-time work is seen as something that we do in order to be able to look after the kids, as well as, you know, getting a wee bit of work in on the side, instead of actually a working pattern that is valuable in and of itself. We also have an issue that I covered when I was discussing the issue of how the gender pay gap is structural, the undervaluation of women's work. Work that is seen as women's work, such as care, admin, cleaning and retail. So that undervaluation of that work is a huge problem. And we also have the issue of women's disproportionate responsibility for unpaid care work. Are maybe a little bit more aware of when they think of the gender pay gap, such as biased and untransparent recruitment, development and progression practices. Things like where you'll see a woman and a man going up for a job where they both have the same capabilities. Other different examples of how recruitment, development, progression practices can be untransparent and biased, that works against women, particularly when it comes to progressing into male-dominated and senior roles. Girls have the issue of male-orientated work, place cultures that don't feel inclusive to women, the old boys' club, you know, banter, just not a very nice place to be. And that's a big issue when we think about one of the main things that you see very often discussed as a way to close the pay gap, getting more women into, for instance, STEM jobs. One of the big reasons that women don't stay in STEM jobs, I think 73% of female graduates of STEM degrees are longer working in STEM industries. And one of the major reasons for that is male-oriented workplace cultures. They're just not a nice place to be for women. So it's a rational decision in response to a not very nice workplace culture. And then finally, there's also still discrimination embedded within pay and grading systems, which results in women being paid less than men for doing equal work, despite the fact that equal pay is provided for in law.
So you mentioned the law and legislation a lot there. Do you think there's something currently wrong with the legislation in terms of pay and inequality? Or do you think there's another way that we can practically close the pay gap?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that just would be quite difficult to tackle under the law, and it requires a whole scale, there are so many different factors of women's inequality in the workplace. We really need to see gender inequality tackled across society as a whole, and that may involve some changes to the law, but I think a lot of it you know, doesn't necessarily have to include just the law. There are other things that we could do. One of our key concerns about current legislation is around the gender pay gap reporting regulations. And I think there was a piece in the media this morning which indicated that of those, I think around 10% of employers who are due to report the pay gap again this year have published already, and a large, I think most of them, their pay gaps have actually widened. And this comes back to one of our key criticisms of the legislation in the first place, which is that it does not require employers to take action. So publishing your gender pay gap is all well and good, but when you haven't done the analysis that tells you what are the causes that are underlying that pay gap and committed, laid out and committed publicly to action to tackle that, we're not going to see any change. And we've known this before that legislation came into place. There's research from the Government Equalities Office, there's research from ourselves that shows that employers are unlikely to take action to close their gender pay gap unless they're required to by law. So we would argue that the legislation as it currently stands is insufficient, and it should require employers to supplement their gender pay gap reporting with an analysis of that data that calls out what the key causes for those that employer is and what action, more importantly, they're committed to taking.
I think there's a real big misconception about the pay gap, that because it is written into law that men and women should be paid the same, a lot of people think it's not an issue anymore. So I've spoken to people at uni, and they've argued to me that the pay gap doesn't exist. What would you say to people that completely disregard the idea of the pay gap?
You can see that there's a huge pay gap there. Every year, the government, the ONS rather, publishes the gender pay gap at a UK level, and we calculate it at Scotland level. And I would say the pay gap is not the same as being paid less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's not the same as women being paid less than men for doing jobs that are considered to be of equal value as the jobs that are done by men. It's far greater than that. And the fact that women's poverty rates are much higher than men's, and that feeds into child poverty rates, you know, the fact that all of the jobs that we see as being women's work are really low paid tells you that we have a problem, because it's not the same in the world over. You know, I think some of the things that we consider to be, you know, fundamentally innate gender differences, we simply don't see them and play out in the same way in every country, which tells us that they're cultural and societal norms. For instance, in Iran, the majority of engineers are women. In Vietnam, women do the vast majority of heavy labour and construction work. So there are ideas that we think of as, in the UK, I think, as being innate differences, and all of the evidence tells us that it is not. So I think it just comes down to the fact that these are broad cultural and societal changes that we need to see, and the kind of norms that we've had around gender are so heavily ingrained that's an uncomfortable process to challenge. That it's uncomfortable for the people doing the challenging, and it's uncomfortable for the people being challenged. But I think also framing it as a structural issue is not about individual people being sexist. It's about a structural issue. The structure is, you know, fundamentally predisposed to favour men over women. I think framing it in the structural way is a really helpful way forward.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about it's going to be an uncomfortable time, and it's going to take, very frustratingly, it will take a lot of time to finally come to fruition.
Because
it is such an ingrained thing in all of our sort of perceptions of society.
Absolutely.
So do you think that there needs to be something at a lower level with education at schools?
And what
can we do about that? Because it is going to be the next generation that's going to be able to put this in place going forward.
When we talk about the gender pay gap, when the labour market equality, we talk about it as a sort of cradle to the labour market problem. But arguably, it starts before children are even born, and it does go on after, the impacts go on after people have left the labour market. For instance, what women's pension or poverty is far higher than men's. So we advocate for action at each part of that pipeline, and so that includes training for early years workers and training for teachers on what gender inequality is, how gender stereotypes play out, how they influence what children think that they can and can't be in life, how to challenge those stereotypes and how to support children, and also how to help them to make subject and career choices that reflect their skills and capacities rather than assumptions that are made about what's right for girls and what's right for boys. And that education needs to happen right across the education pipeline. So early years, primary school teachers, secondary teachers, right into apprenticeships and colleges and universities. And I think that pipeline change is a huge part of the work that needs to happen to tackle the gender pay gap. One of the more positive stories that we have is we've been working with the Scottish Government and they are developing a gender pay gap action plan, which seeks to do just that. The work has looked at all of the different points along the sort of education, skills and work pipeline to see where are the points where action is needed, and the Scottish Government has committed to take action along those lines. So there is there's a framework that can be used quite easily to build on that and to lobby for that work to happen across the UK.
So you mentioned that things are in place, the ball's rolling to make a lot of improvements in this area. But in your time at the charity, have you seen any improvements in the field? Do you think you've seen it being discussed more or changes being made practically?
Certainly, we have seen, because we work in Scotland, we're based in Scotland, and the legal framework is slightly different up here, and we do have, you know, our own central government, which sits alongside Westminster. We've seen a real uptick in the engagement of the Scottish Government on issues around the gender pay gap, and I think there is a real appetite now to do something about it. There's a lot of frustration that there's been a lot of efforts over the years to tackle the pay gap that have not necessarily resulted in much change, and I think there's a recognition now that it needs something, you know, bigger and broader that takes action along each point at the same time, you know, that is where action's required rather than just something that works on this little bit over here or that little bit over there. So there definitely has been an increase in the appetite and commitment. There's definitely still a long way to go. For instance, the public sector equality duty that I mentioned earlier that requires public bodies to be proactive in their work to tackle inequality and not just respond to issues as they arise. The duty has not resulted in the level of change in terms of practice and policy that we would have hoped to have seen in the public sector, but there's a consultation this year on how the duty has worked or not worked and what we can do to change it, and we know that there's a really appetite to look at that, you know, constructively and see how we can rework it in order to get the results that we want to see, because, you know, outcomes are what matters. You know, we need to see a change for the experiences of women in the workplace, and that will hopefully lead to the pay gap narrowing in the future.
And at times it does look incredibly dire, but I think it is in a positive move at the moment, so that is incredibly positive. Could you elaborate a little bit on the experiences for employment of BME women? So people listening that aren't aware, that's Black Minority Ethnic Women. Is this how this adds a new angle to the debate, and what can be done about this as a separate issue?
Worked really hard to try and do intersectional work where possible. Actually, this week we have just launched a newest piece of research, which is called Research on Black and Minority Ethnic Women's Experiences of Employment in Scotland. And although it's Scotland focused, a lot of these issues will read across the UK. And so that research found some quite staggering issues. For instance, 3/4 of the women who participated in our research reported that they'd experienced racism, discrimination, bias in the workplace. And just over half of those who said they had experienced it, but they didn't report it because they were not confident in the reporting processes or they thought they'd be penalised for reporting it. So there was some real concerning stats around bullying as well. 42% of respondents said they'd experienced bullying. And the kind of key thing here is that bullying is both an intersection of racism and sexism. And in some cases, you know, we see, for instance, Muslim women experiencing a triple penalty where they have sexism and racism layered over Islamophobia. And that really places a really toxic environment for those women in the workplace. So that work that we have done will be used to inform the broader work that we do on the causes of the pay gap and women's labour market inequality. And the next piece of work that we're hoping to focus on will be some research on disabled women's experience of employment and how they vary.
So you mentioned that you're going on to do some work on disabled women and their experience, but what's next for Close the Gap and what are you working on at the moment other than that?
In Scotland we have the Equally Safe Strategy, which is the Scottish Government strategy on violence against women and girls. And it's an overarching strategy that seeks to tackle all of the causes of violence against women and girls. And it recognises that violence against women and girls is both a cause and a consequence of broader gender inequality. We have developed a project looking at the workplace that sits underneath the Equally Safe framework. So that's called Equally Safe at Work. And it's evidence that they have met a series of criteria around gender inequality at work, and they will be able to achieve a different accreditation level, bronze, silver or gold as part of it. Requirements, and so we are piloting that in the public sector here right now with local councils, and we are hoping to roll that out across all employers in the future, and to make it open for all employers in the future, because we know that if employers can be encouraged to take action and are able to then or have to provide evidence of that action, then that's a really good step forward for driving change.
And finally, what can everyday women listening do about fair pay and treatment in the workplace? What can people that maybe are listening going, well, it's just something that happens and there's nothing I can do about it, maybe do to make a small difference?
The advice I would give to women in the workplace would be to just try and educate yourself on what the issues are, read up. You know, there's lots of information on Close the Gap's website that's easily accessible to try and, you know, understand what the different issues are and how they play out in the workplace and which rules might apply to you. And in that case, I would refer you either to your trade union, if you're a member of a trade union, or to the Equality and Human Rights Commission's advice line, which offers free advice on that. But I really think it's not about the actions of individual women. It's not about individual women taking equal pay claims. It's not about individual women negotiating higher pay when they move into new jobs or when they want to advance. It's all of our responsibility. It's a structural issue, and it's going to take long-term cultural and structural change if we're going to see progress.
Well, I don't think it could have been rounded off any better than that. And hopefully we will see changes in the near future.
This is University Radio Nottingham.
So that was you hearing that from Close the Gap. Close the Gap is a wonderful charity, and I really enjoyed speaking to them about what they were doing in Scotland. Things like Close the Gap do show how you can really work with employers to change the gender pay gap. It very much is some of it needs to just be done tangibly, but also, as with so many things, with gender roles and feminism, it's an institutional, educational difference that needs to be made. People need to be aware from really being born that there are these institutional differences and that you can do any job you want to do and anything you set your mind to, regardless of your gender or your social background or whatever the case may be. I think there is positive steps, and I think the fact that large companies do now have to disclose what they pay all of their employees is really positive. A lot of companies do just think they're disclosing it and don't have to do anything about it. It's positive that the university do want to make steps and make ground in changing this. We've got to keep challenging our employers. We've got to keep challenging the norms of society with things like equal pay and gender pay. And the fact that it's not something that's going to happen overnight is something we've got to stay positive about and be realistic, because when the results of all of the pays are released this April, I can guarantee they will not be what we want to see. It might be going in the right direction, but it'll be going in the right direction by 0.2%, or maybe even less than that, or maybe it will have gone backwards. If it is the case that that has happened, it's only been a year, and I don't think we can expect, and I don't think it's fair to assume that things will have changed that quickly. It's going to be something that takes a lot of time, and hopefully we will get there in the end.